This checklist, with its dress-ups, openers, decoration triples, whatever you got going, this is a way to master a wide range of word usages and grammatical constructions, but there should be that goal of mastery.
Hello, and welcome to the Arts of Language podcast with Andrew Poudois, founder of the Institute for Excellence in Writing, or as many like to say, IEW. My name is Julie Walker, and I'm honored to serve Andrew and IEW as the Chief Marketing Officer. Our goal is to equip teachers and teaching parents with methods and materials which will aid them in training their students to become confident and competent communicators and thinkers. So, Andrew, do you want to know what our most frequently asked question is on our forums, on our Facebook pages, calls into customer service?
I'm guessing it's something like, I heard about you guys, but I have no idea what you do or what to do, where to begin, what, who are you?
Yeah, well, It's the where to start question, yeah. Yes. And because I think people kind of get the idea of Institute for Excellence in Writing. Oh, they're going to teach us writing. So what does that actually mean? English composition, not handwriting. Although we do have a handwriting.
We do have a handwriting.
Yes.
Little side product that's pretty good.
Yeah.
But I mean, we don't use the word composition. We do use the word writing.
Yes.
So that can be a little confusing.
Yes.
But I think once they read a little bit about what we do with structure and style, it starts to make sense.
And so we actually have a page on our website devoted to that. And we have a page for the schools, so full-time school teachers. Where do I start with IEW? That URL is iewschools.com/start. And it's a little different than the one on our main website, iew.com/start. And I'm going to just basically tell you the difference. So what we do on the schools division is we say, step one, connect with an educational consultant, because they're going to help you understand your unique situation in your school and how to implement it in your school. Step number two is choose your curriculum. Step number three is get teacher training. And step number four is celebrate success. So it's kind of a three-step implementation program, because the step four is just like, you're going to have results and we guarantee it.
Well, and step one, you know, connect with an EC. That's just so you don't get confused or lost or waste any time.
Exactly.
Or have to buy something and send it back. We want people to have the best possible combination of materials and training for their school. And honestly, there are different situations. There's small school with just a few teachers. There's whole districts. There's hybrid schools. There's micro schools. So fortunately, we have a lot of experience in serving all of those different types of schools and school organizations.
Exactly. And then the thing on the, we call it homeschool side, but it's everyone else, because it could be parents who are teaching their kids after school. It could be a tutor situation. It could be a co-op situation. It's the same three steps, only we cut out the first one, because you can probably figure it out yourself. You look at the curriculum, and we have two curricular options, video-based and paper-based. And there's a pathway to both of these. And then the second step is get that teacher training, because for the best results, your students are going to do better if you yourself know the method.
Yeah. And that pathway is very nicely shown in a graphic in the catalog. So anyone who doesn't have our catalog and wants to see it, well, get the catalog, look at it online, because I think it's pretty clear.
Yep.
You start here, do this first, then you can do this, then you can do that. Or you could do that. And so there are options within that. And like anything, the first year is always going to be the newness of it can create a little bit of confusion or anxiety. But, you know, like I said on that video we made a long time ago, the hardest thing is just turn on the video and start.
Start learning. Exactly. Well, and then the pathway that you talked about, one of the neat things about it is that we use the term parachute in at any level. If you have a ninth grade student and they can't write a sentence or a paragraph, no problem. You can jump right into our system. We've got materials for them that will meet them where they are. Or if you are teaching in a school, back to that school thing, and you've got the situation where you've got new students joining your classroom, kind of the same idea. But, and this is where this podcast is going, I'm going to read you a question, Andrew. And you had, your response when I sent you this question is, we should devote an entire podcast to this question.
Yes. Can I interject one thing?
Yes, of course.
As I've said many times, I really don't like the idea of grade levels because it, in people's minds, it just corresponds with an age.
Yes.
And we really try to say reading level rather than age. So if you did have a, quote, ninth grade student who could not write a paragraph or had never written a paragraph because of whatever reason, then it would be perfectly okay to start with something that was written at a lower level.
Right.
So it might
reading
look
level.
Like,
yep.
You know, the level B material, middle school reading level. But we don't put numbers or grades on anything. So it's okay. And it's always better to err on the side of starting with something that's a little simpler, maybe a little shorter, a little less complex so fast. And if that goes well, you can always speed up. But if you start and you've got something that's, you know, already too complex after the, you know, fourth or fifth lesson, that's not going to come out as well as it would if you simply moved back a notch.
Yes.
So if everyone can, you know, when you're looking at this, just think more like reading level, and that's a better clue than age.
Yes.
And that can go the other way too. I mean, I've met 10-year-olds who read and write circles around most middle school students.
Sure.
And so, yeah, in that case, you could go up in complexity.
Right.
But it's always better to err on less complexity and a little bit slower.
Well, and I say at the beginning of every podcast, our goal is to equip teachers and teaching parents with methods and materials which will aid them in training their students to become, and we say it specifically in this order, confident and competent communicators and thinkers. And by going down, we're building those students' confidence so that they feel like they can do it. But that could be another completely different episode.
Well,
right?
It is on motivation. We've done several podcasts on motivation.
Exactly.
You could link to those. All right. So what's this interesting email that you want to read to me here?
Well, it's very long, but I'm not going to read the whole email. But here's kind of the bottom line. This is from one of our listeners, Duffy. And she says, after 3 years of direct study and 2 years of using the techniques, I'm a little concerned that my daughter will get entirely bored. So she's in a hybrid school type situation of repeating the structure and style for the next 4 years of writing. In other words, we have a pathway. We can recommend which to do at each level, and that can go on for 6 or 7 years. What kind of, I mean,
where's the termination?
When do we end with structure and style?
I mean, a pathway is only a pathway if it has an end.
Yes.
The top of the mountain, you get to the lake, you're at your friend's house.
You
took a pathway. Where are you going? So it's a very good question. And I would go back to something I try to make very clear in the Teaching Writing Structure and Style seminar when we introduce the idea of stylistic techniques. And that is that this checklist with its dress-ups, openers, decoration triples, whatever you got going, this is not a checklist that you would use and obey for life. This is not the formula for the greatest writing you will ever produce. This is a way to master a wide range of word usages and grammatical constructions and literary devices, but there should be that goal of mastery. So the goal is to use the checklist and require everything in every paragraph of every composition with very few exceptions until doing the whole checklist has become easy, because that's our whole philosophy, is easy plus one. Well, at some point you're going to get to it's all easy. and there is no more plus one. What do you do? And I say at that point, well, that's when you graduate from the checklist. Then you can use or not use the stylistic techniques. You can create variations on those stylistic techniques. You could go read your favorite authors and probably find some more stylistic mm-hmm. techniques yourself to practice and use and make easy and build your repertoire. That's really the goal, is building the repertoire of ways to do things. But at a certain point, you'd say, okay, I'm free of the requirement. I will now use or not use according to my audience, according to my goals, according to my personal preferences, according to the purpose of the assignment or the composition. And so that's really the goal, is not to obey the checklist the rest of your life, but to graduate from it. And it goes back to that old saying, you know, you have to follow the rules until you can, and then you can break some of them, right? And we see authors all over the place do sure. that. And, you know, I'm sure Charles Dickens knew exactly what he was doing when he wrote the first paragraph of Bleak House and didn't use a single complete sentence in the entire paragraph. He was breaking a rule lots of times, all in a row, but for a very specific literary objective. And then in the next paragraph, whenever it is, he shifts over and starts writing in complete sentences. And you see, aha, he was using that very austere fragment, compulsive fragment style to create an effect. So that's, you know, that's one thing to think about.
Well, and let me just speak to that for a moment, because I don't want anybody who's listening to this say, my student has gone through structure and style for 2 years, and therefore, well, we're ready to graduate. I can't imagine many students who actually have mastered the entire checklist until they've gone through the structure and style syllabus 3 or 4 years. Because there's a lot of stylistic techniques, and to master them means you do them without sounding too goofy.
Yeah, it's not contrived. It's not goofy. You figure out a way to make it work.
So this is not going to happen the first or second year.
Well, and I will interject here. I learned this system 34 years ago, almost, right?
Yeah.
So over 30 years, I have been writing compositions.
Sure.
For various purposes and reasons.
Including our school Magalog.
And, you know, when I write the articles for the Magalog or some other magazine or somebody asks me, I don't have the checklist there. I don't follow to be sure I've got, you know, all the dress ups, opener, decoration, triple in every single paragraph of the thing. I notice, oh, I had 3 subject openers in a row. Can I flip a sentence? Can I stick in a prepositional phrase? Usually that adjustment makes it better. But I will only do that if it really would make it better. But because I can do it so easily, I usually can make it better. However, I have, especially when we're making the SSS videos, on a few occasions, written a sample composition wherein I followed the entire checklist just the way the students were going to have to, topic clincher rules, paragraphs, everything. And what I have found is that I never get bored with that.
Yes.
It's a game. It's a game I can play, and I can play it very well. And so I enjoy it. And while I'm not compelled to do it, if I choose to use the whole checklist, in a way, it makes it more interesting for me. And I don't think the product is less because I did that. You know, I do have the problem that it takes more time. And I got, you know, some kid will write me a letter and he'll use every single technique in all 5 paragraphs of his letter. And then I feel like, okay, I'm either going to write a very short note of about 1 paragraph, or I'm going to have to match him technique for technique. And do I have the time to do that? But it's still a game for me, even after 3 decades of doing it. And I don't think there's anything wrong with that. So I'm not sure that you can overdo it. Now, I'm not as likely as, say, a 17-year-old kid to get bored. I don't get bored. I can't think of the last time that I was ever bored. Mm-hmm. But I can understand how a student who did this for, you know, 5, 6, 7 years would be like, yeah, okay, I know all this. So what mm-hmm. should I do? And so that's the question. Is what do you do after you graduate from the checklist?
Right, right.
Now, the structural models, I think there's enough variation and enough freedom I don't see that as really a problem you'd get bored with. You're just going to start playing with it, and they may, you know, your unit three narratives may look different than the three paragraphs you started with when you were, you know, in fifth grade 5 years ago.
Yes, because even the seminar workbook actually gives many variations.
Many variations.
Of the unit
many
three
variations.
Model. Yep.
So the structural models, I don't think, you know, that's quite the same problem of, oh, I've been doing this forever and I'm tired of it. But the style techniques, I can see it.
Well, and the structural models, I think that's why we get so many comments from parents or students who are now in college and their professors are saying, where did you learn to write? Because these students have spent some time wrestling with these structural models that they can interpret the professor's assignment as, oh, that's a unit four.
Yep.
I can totally do that.
And see the podcast we did on unit eight to discuss some of those options.
Yes, exactly.
I do think there are many interesting things which a teenager who's had, let's say, 6 years, right? 6 years consistently, grade, you know, four through nine, for example. Okay, now this kid is 14, 15 years old. They've aced the system. They can churn it out. It sounds really good. Now what can they do? Well, I think one of the most obvious things is take a writing class from someone else, a completely different source. Maybe it's an online composition class from a college or university. Maybe it's a teacher who's teaching kind of advanced composition and they don't know our system, because that's when you can really test out your stuff, right? Can I make this teacher happy? Can I do that assignment using the tools I know, but not being handicapped or limited in that I have to force everything into every paragraph and do it in this exact way? So that would be the first thing I would recommend is take a class from someone else and see how well all your arsenal of secret weapons works.
Yes.
And usually what you said, the kids go off to college, the teachers don't understand. How did you learn to do this? I don't know. My mom taught me, or that's what we did in my school. Another thing that I think is very good is competitions. Get in an essay competition. And the essay competition, unless it's ours, but, you know, there are a lot of good options. And sometimes, you know, it's at a very high level with big scholarship, you know, $5,000 scholarship. Then you can have this idea of, okay, I am not going to be constrained by these checklists, but I do want to write the best possible thing I can to enter into this competition. Along with that would be get involved in public speaking, get into a league, the, you know, debate league or NCFCA or STOA or one of, you know, take a public speaking class in school, if you're in a school, and then try out your stuff. Writing a speech, which is a little different. When you're writing a speech, you're writing something that is meant to be spoken and communicated verbally with a wider range of expression that's possible with a real mouth and a real voice and a real body. And so shift over to that genre. Another thing I think is a very good thing, we touch on this in Unit 7, which is author imitation.
Mm-hmm.
I love this. Read an author that you like and try to figure out, how does that author write? What does Dickens do to sound like Dickens? Or, you know, what does Hemingway do to sound like Hemingway? And then see if you can imitate various authors. That is tremendously valuable, because then you start to really see the combination and permutation of the structure and style techniques, but in these great works that you can understand them so much better. And that author imitation, I think there's so much that can be explored in that direction. Poetry would be another thing that's going to really press and stretch your limits as to how you would use words. And so study different poetic forms and practice poetry. I saw a very good movie recently. I mean, technically it was okay, but I enjoyed it. So to that degree, it was good. It was about Henry Wadsworth Longfellow.
Oh, okay.
And his wife, you know, died in a very sad accident, her dress caught on fire and she essentially burned to death. And he tried to save her and he got terribly burned in the process. And he just stopped writing. Here's the most famous poet in the English-speaking world, probably in the whole world by that time. And he was so devastated by the loss of his wife, he didn't write anything for a long time. The movie is called I Heard the Bells, which is the first line of the first poem that he wrote when he started writing again after his wife died. But his daughter made a joke and someone said, your father's a writer. And she said, no, he's a poet. What's the difference? One rambles, the other rhymes.
Oh, that's funny.
And I thought he probably said that.
Yeah.
You know, I think it authentic. But there's a skill in poetry.
Yes.
That's going to refine wordsmithing to a degree you really won't get any other way.
That's true.
So poetry is an excellent thing. And, you know, there are some novel writing curriculums, both online and published. You know, if you've got a student who's very good, usually they'll be the ones to say, I want to write a book. Okay, let's help you do that. What a great project for your, you know, sophomore year of high school, if you're so inclined. And now you're off checklist. Just show your stuff. Try what works. And so those are a few options.
Well, and Andrew, do you know what class I remember taking in high school those many, many years ago?
I was not there.
You weren't there.
I do not remember.
We definitely went to different high schools, but it was preparation for college testing. And some of the things that you mentioned, I thought, you could totally make a course out of this. And you spend that semester applying for scholarships with essays or, you know, doing competition, doing competitive writing, enrolling in essay contests, or, I mean, we have a course on introduction to public speaking you could do. And so I guess what I hear you saying is this particular school, if they feel like their students are getting a little too much structure and style, take a break. But I do like the idea to come back before they go off to college, consider the University of Ready Writing, because we want to give them the best opportunity for success at the collegiate level.
It's a good refresher. So I think, though, the case where you have a student that did consistently 6 years of structure and style, well done, mastered the checklist, I think that's less common than we might think. Because most schools and most class groups, what happens is people come and people go, right? So you may have a class and a third of the kids have been, this is their sixth year doing it, but two thirds of the kids, you know, they've only been doing it 3 years or 2 years or no years, and they're right there in the beginning. So, you know, that's at the point where you really would like to be able to differentiate and say to some of your students, okay, here's what you guys should go do.
Yep.
I'll help you when I have time, but you're pretty much on your own. And we're going to be sure that everyone else gains the skills that the rest of the students have. And, you know, age-segregated classrooms where kids are coming and going, it's a difficult situation. No one's going to argue that it isn't a challenging dynamic. And perhaps there's alternatives to that, but we don't necessarily have them, or we can't change the infrastructure of our school to divide kids differently. So we're going to keep them in nth grade and try to, you know, both challenge, give freedom, and cover the basic things you want everyone to have. And, you know, if a kid's in high school at 17 and they're totally bored because they know everything, they should just quit high school and go to college, you know, or quit high school and get a job. That'd be my opinion. But of course, I have some radical opinions.
Yes, yes, you often do. But I think the advice that we've given today will be very applicable, not just to this listener, but to many, many listeners who are wondering this same question. When to stop with structure and style, because we go all the way up. We go K-12 and beyond.
And that's because most kids are coming in around grade 4, 5, 6, sometimes 7, 8, sometimes just a high school.
Sure.
And, you know, we do know that for almost everyone, you want at least 3 good years, and 4 is even better. And 6 is not going to kill you.
Right.
But, you know, what would be interesting is to poll a few of the kids we know that went through 4 or 5 years and now see what are they doing as young adults and to what degree did that prepare them well and assist them? To what degree did they find maybe something they didn't learn and had to? And was it easy to learn that new thing and apply it? Or do they wish they'd had something different? I mean, it'd be a good research project.
Sounds like a good idea. Well, thank you, Andrew.
Oh, well, thank you.
Thanks so much for joining us. If you enjoyed this episode and want to hear more, please subscribe to our podcast in iTunes, Google Podcasts, Stitcher, or Spotify, or just visit us each week at iew.com/podcasts. Here you can also find show notes and relevant links from today's broadcast. One last thing, would you mind going to iTunes to rate and review our podcast? This really helps other smart, caring listeners like you find us. Thanks so much.